Hype City, baby. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. This episode of the Hemingway List is brought to you by an empty bottle that is sitting next to me. No beverage. It's brought to you by No Beverage and my second book, A Duet for Swans, a fantasy novel where two young people travel across the land in a magically flying tugboat in search of the ocean to fulfill a prophecy and find someone to mentor them in the ways of magic. It's called A Duet for Swans, and you can get it on my website, andrewlewis.com. That's me, advertising for me. I suppose that's what you got to do in the world. Today we're talking about part 4, chapter 11. I didn't write my own discussion prompts today. I just stole them from shmoop.com, which has chapter summaries. I just pinched them. But I'll read them. It's more like a summary of chapter 11 rather than discussion prompts. Kitty and Levin refrained from joining in the general conversation, although parts of it would have been interesting to them in different circumstances. Levin explains to Kitty how he saw her the year before in the carriage. They talk about the merits of Turovstin, a seemingly shallow society man who Kitty reveals to have a self-sacrificing streak. When Dolly's kids all had scarlet fever this past summer, he was so moved that he helped her look after them. Levin determines never to think poorly of anyone ever again. Levin could not be happier than he is right now talking to Kitty. "I am," Norwegian said. "That might be the shortest chapter yet." Levin and Kitty are actually managing to talk to each other and without that awkward air that Levin's one-sided intention produced before. "I don't think it's the shortest chapter yet, but it was the shortest one in a long time, that's for sure." It was like 2 pages or 2.5 pages. But I'm pretty sure there was a chapter that was like less than 1 page a while back. In like book one, part one, I should say. Simply Productive said, "Am I going to get my wish? All I want for Christmas is Kitty and Levin to end up together." Good grief. I have to admit, though, that the boring chapters are easy for me to read right now compared to my library list. I use Libby, which is a very large library ebook app, but because it serves so many libraries, it also has very long wait times for popular books. One of my books was on hold for 32 weeks, and lo and behold, 8 books came in all at the same time, so I've been reading endlessly for a few days. Honestly, these chapters are a bit of a respite. Some of my books aren't holding up to the hype, but with this book, there really is no hype. There's just an excitement of chatting with friends. I don't understand. Like, so it's a library ebook app, but you have to wait for people to check them in. But it's just a digital file, so it's just sort of like an artificial scarcity, right? Surely they could just send you the book if it's an ebook. Anyway, I don't really understand it. I've never used Libby. But still, regardless, that's a pretty cool thing that you can just get an app and borrow ebooks rather than buying them. Thermos of Beer said, "This comment got longer than I had anticipated, but I figured if I'm looking for some book recommendations, I should leave a few too. Anyone who reads this, feel free to reply some you've read lately and your thoughts if you feel inclined, or feel free to ignore." Oh, okay, so we've got some book recommendations. Can I ask what books you're reading? I'm doing this in War and Peace, but I usually read at least one other book also, and right now I'm between books and haven't decided on a new one. I've recently read The Terror by Dan Simmons, The Abominable by Dan Simmons, A Song of Kali by Dan Simmons, Summer of Night by Dan Simmons. I would recommend you try maybe some Dan Simmons. I reckon you might like him. A Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. World War Z by Max Brooks. Into the Thin Air by John Krakow. Non-fiction about a disaster on Everest. Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. Count Alexander Rostov gets sentenced to house arrest in the famed Metropole Hotel in Moscow. Joy to Read. Alright, I might try that. That's been made into movies and shows and stuff, isn't it? Misery by Stephen King. Red Rising by Piers Brown. All Quiet on the Western Front. Slaughterhouse-5. Alright. So you've read some good stuff. I don't think I've actually read any of the books you listed there. but A Gentleman in Moscow. I think I'll read that. I think I'll put it on the list. What would be my recommendations? Okay, if you're in the mood for fantasy, I would recommend Terry Pratchett always. This is the top of the fantasy because it's funny and it's also a really good fantasy. If you haven't read any Terry Pratchett, grab Mort or Guards Guards. Give them a try. Or get Good Omens. You've probably read all these anyway. Or if you haven't read His Dark Materials, that's really good. That's a kind of YA, but it's very, very good. Or what's an obscure but good... An obscure but good fantasy series, I would say, The Trio for Lute. The first book of which is called Damiano, by R.A. McAvoy. Very, very good fantasy series. Trilogy. There you go. There's some recommendations for you in the fantasy genre. Sci-fi, I would recommend you give Stanislaw Lem a try. Stanislaw Lem was very, very good. So good that Philip K. Dick believed that Stanislaw Lem was multiple people posing as one person, because he thought no one person can be so good at writing. And it actually drove Philip K. Dick mad in the later years of his life. Like, it was literally like the subject of a mental breakdown that he had. If you want some literary fiction, I would try some Australian literary fiction by Tim Winton. He's very good. Dirt Music by Tim Winton. Dirt Music, really good book. What else can I recommend? I'm just looking at my shelves here. What's another genre? You seem to like a bit of like mystery and thriller and that kind of thing. I don't read a lot of that. I could recommend young Aaron Huggins. He's one of my students. He wrote a sci-fi murder mystery, which is a little bit Douglas Adams, Terry Pratchett-esque, meets kind of Agatha Christie cozy mystery. And he's a young writer. He's only 16, but this is by no means like YA. It's just good sci-fi, good mystery. That's called Live a Little by Aaron Huggins. You can give that one a try. What else can I recommend you? I reckon that's enough. You've got my recommendations there. Yeah. So there you go. That's the conversation. That was all the conversation. I don't even think we really talked about the chapter. That's all good. Let's keep reading. Chapter 12 goes something like this. Let me just get comfortable here. In the conversation which had been begun on the rights of women, there were raised some questions not freely to be discussed in the presence of ladies concerning the inequalities of marriage relations. Petsov, more than once during dinner time, flew at these questions, but Koznishev and Oblonsky carefully diverted him from them. When they rose from the table and the ladies had left the room, Petsov did not follow them, but turned to Karenin and began to state the chief cause of inequality. The inequality between husband and wife, in his opinion, lay in the fact that the infidelity of a wife and that of a husband were unequally punished both by law and by public opinion. Oblonsky hurriedly offered Karenin a cigar. "No, I don't smoke," quietly replied Karenin, and as if wishing to show that he was not afraid of the conversation, he turned with a cold smile to Petsov. "I imagine the cause of the prevailing opinion lies in the very nature of things," he said, and was about to go to the drawing-room, but Turovsin quite unexpectedly addressed him. "Have you heard about Priyachnikov?" said Turovsin, animated by the champagne he had drunk, and impatient to break his silence, which had long oppressed him, and with a kindly smile on his moist and rosy lips, he went on addressing himself chiefly to Karenin, the principal guest. "Vasya Priyachnikov, Vasya Priyachnikov, as I was told today, has fought a duel with Kvitsky and killed him. As one always seems to knock a sore place, so that day Oblonsky felt that unfortunately the conversation kept striking Karenin's sore place. He again made an attempt to draw his brother-in-law away, but Karenin himself asked, with interest, what did Priachnikov fight about? His wife, he behaved like a brick, challenged the other and killed him. Oh, said Karenin indifferently, and raising his eyebrows he went to the drawing-room. I am so glad you came, said Dolly with a frightened smile, as she met him in the sitting-room through which he had to pass. I must speak with you. Let us sit down here. Karenin, with the same look of indifference produced by his raised eyebrows, sat down beside her and feigned a smile. Yes, he said, especially as I wish to ask you to excuse me for having to go away at once. I am leaving Moscow tomorrow. Dolly was firmly convinced of Anna's innocence, and felt herself growing pale and her lips trembling from anger with this cold, unfeeling man who so calmly intended to ruin her innocent friend. Alexis Alexandrovich, she said, looking into his eyes with desperate determination, I asked you about Anna, and you did not give me an answer. How is she? I think she is well, Darya Alexandrovna, replied Karenin. Oh my god. Sorry, let me try that again. I think she is well, Darya Alexandrovna, replied Karenin without looking at her. Alexis Alexandrovich, forgive me, I have no right to, but I love Anna like a sister and respect her, and I beg, I implore you to tell me what has happened between you. What do you accuse her of? Alexis Alexandrovich winced, and almost closing his eyes, bowed his head. I expect your husband has told you the reasons which make me consider it necessary to change my former relations with Anna Arkadyevna, he said, without looking in her eyes. Discontentedly eyeing Shabatsky, who was passing through the sitting room. I don't believe it, I cannot believe it, Dolly said, clasping her bony hands with an energetic movement. She rose quickly, put her hand on Karenin's sleeve, and said, We shall be disturbed here. Come this way, please. Dolly's excitement affected Karenin. He rose and obediently followed her into the schoolroom. They sat down at the table covered with leather cloth, all cut about with penknives. I don't believe it, I don't, she uttered, trying to catch his eyes, which avoided hers. One can't disbelieve facts, Darya Alexandrovna, said he, emphasizing the word facts. But what has she done? Asked Darya Alexandrovna. What is it she has done? She has despised her duties and betrayed her husband. That is what she has done, he said. No, no, it can't be. No, for God's sake. You are mistaken, said Dolly, raising her hands to her temples and closing her eyes. Karenin smiled coldly with his lips only, wishing to prove to her and to himself the firmness of his conviction, but this passionate defence, though it did not shake him, lacerated his wound. He began speaking with more animation. It is difficult to make a mistake when a wife herself announces to her husband that 8 years of married life and a son have all been an error, and that she wants to begin life from the beginning again, he said, crossly, sniffing. Anna and vice, I cannot combine them. I cannot believe it. Darya Alexandrovna, he said, now looking straight at Dolly's kind, excited face and feeling his tongue involuntarily loosened. I would give much for the possibility of doubting. While I was in doubt, it was hard, but not so hard as it is now. While I doubted, I had hope, but now there is no hope left, and all the same, I doubt everything. I doubt everything so much that I hate my son, and sometimes believe he is not my son. I am very unhappy. There was no need for him to say this. Dolly had understood it as soon as he looked her in the face. She felt sorry for him, and her faith in her friend's innocence was shaken. Oh, it is terrible, terrible, but can it be true that you have decided on a divorce? I have decided to take the final step. There is nothing else for me to do. Nothing to do, nothing to do, she muttered with tears in her eyes. No, there is something else to do, she said. That is just what is so terrible in this kind of grief that you can't do, as in all other troubles, losses and deaths. Just bear your cross, but here you must act, he said, as if guessing her thoughts. You must come out of the degrading position in which you are placed. It is impossible to live three together. I understand very well, said Dolly, and her head dropped. She was silent, thinking of herself and her own sorrow, and then, suddenly and energetically, she raised her head and folded her hands as in prayer. "But wait, you are a Christian. Think of her. What will become of her if you throw her off?" "I have thought, Darya Alexandrovna, and have thought deeply," said Karenin. His face flushed in blotches, and his dim eyes looked straight at her. Dolly now pitied him with all her heart. "I did that very thing when she herself informed me of my shame. I let everything go on as before. I gave her a chance to turn over a new leaf, and I tried to save her. With what result? She disregarded my very easy demand that she should observe the proprieties." He went on, getting heated. "One may save a person who does not wish to perish, but if a nature is so spoiled and depraved that it regards ruin as salvation, what can one do?" "Anything but divorce," answered Dolly. "But what is anything? No, this is too awful. She will be nobody's wife. She will be ruined." "What can I do?" said Karenin, shrugging his shoulders and raising his eyebrows. The recollection of his wife's last delinquency irritated him so much that he again became as cold as he had been at the beginning of the conversation. "I am very grateful for your sympathy, but it is time for me to go," he said, rising. "No, wait a bit. You should not ruin her. Wait a bit. I will tell you about myself. I married, and my husband deceived me. In my anger and jealousy, I wished to abandon everything I myself wished, but was brought to my senses by... And by whom? Anna saved me. And here I am, living, my children growing, my husband returns to the family and feels his error grows purer and better, and I live. I have forgotten, and you must forgive." Karenin listened, but her words no longer affected him. All the bitterness of the day, when he decided on a divorce, rose again in his soul. He gave himself a shake and began to speak in a loud and piercing voice. "I cannot forgive. I don't wish to, and don't think it would be right. I have done everything for that woman, and she has trampled everything in the mud which is natural to her. I am not a cruel man, I have never hated anyone, but I hate her with the whole strength of my soul, and I cannot even forgive her. Because I hate her so much for all the wrong she has done me," he said, with tears of anger choking him. "Love those that hate you," whispered Dolly shamefacedly. Karenin smiled contemptuously. He had long known all that, but it could not apply to his case. "Love them that hate you, but you can't love them whom you hate. Forgive me for having upset you. Everyone has trouble enough of his own." And having got himself under control, Karenin quietly rose, said goodbye, and went away. Alrighty, there we go. That was chapter 12. Completed. Have your say over at the subreddit. Hope to see you there. Thank you for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.